Welcome back to the Wavy Podcast. I'm your host, Gemma, as well as the managing editor of thesoundtrack.ca. If you know me, you know the Antlers have been one of my favorite bands since high school, and I'm really happy to be chatting with Peter Silberman today, who is the singer. Funny enough, he was actually my first in-person interview. I was in grade 12 and offered the opportunity last minute towards the end of the school year. Skipped it on the day, somehow figured out a way to get to Toronto, and it happened. It was great. That was about 6 years ago. Last time we chatted was on the Hospice 10-year anniversary tour a couple years back, and I'm feeling really grateful to have him on the podcast today. Peter, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. Thanks for having me back, Gemma.
Of course. Yeah, it's great to have you here. By the way, that show was breathtaking. I had take it all in for a while. Yeah, I was like crying, but like so was everyone else, so it was fine. I just remember you guys took a break like you did the album, then the lights went on before you went into some other songs, I'm pretty sure, but I saw this like really tall bald dude and he was crying, and then it just made me feel better about crying.
Oh, that's amazing.
There's
no limitations, I guess. It's all-inclusive experience.
Yeah, exactly. I was just so blown away because it was such a simplistic show visually. Like it was just, you know, kind of you guys and the stage and some lighting, and it was one of the best performances I've ever seen.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, but how did you feel after that tour? I know you were feeling a bit hesitant about doing it in the first place.
You know, I came out of it feeling great and feeling like it was just so much bigger of a success than I could have imagined. Just as far as like the vibe every night on stage and off, it was so reinvigorating feeling that support from the audience, seeing that the audience was still there. And I also came out of it after the, I think we did a total of 30 shows. I could be wrong about that, between the US and Canada and overseas in the UK and Europe. And I came out of it feeling like we did like exactly the right number of shows. And then we stopped right when it was going on too long for us, at least.
Right. Well, that's good. You know, then.
I came back like all kind of, you know, a bit exhausted, but not burnt out. And still having like energy to bring ourselves into the next phase of things without feeling like, whoa, I need to take a really long break and not make any music for a while or not even think about the prospect of touring again.
Right, right. Were you, so actually, I guess for the listeners, their new album is Green to Gold. It's their first album in 7 years since Familiars, and it's absolutely stunning. Were you writing that when you were on tour, or was it something that you started after that tour?
I had been writing it for about a year before that tour.
Okay.
And I had kind of hit this natural stopping point in the process where it ended up being good that I took a few months away from it while we prepared for the Hospice tour and then did the Hospice tour. And so by the time I came back, I felt like I had some perspective on the songs that we were working on. And I think it was encouraging to, like I said, to know that the audience was still there and that there were still people out there who might want to hear another Antlers album. So that break was really useful.
Wonderful. So when did you finish the album then?
About a year ago. Actually, it's been done for kind of a while. We finished recording everything probably like a little more than a year ago, probably around like March 1st or something. And then I took a short break to move. And then when I got resettled again, we mixed the album and spent several weeks doing that. And so I think it was all probably wrapped up and mastered by beginning of the summer.
Wow, so you really lucked out then in terms of recording, like doing it all before the pandemic.
Yeah, well, for the most part, I record everything from a studio space at home. So I don't know if it would have ended up being a lot different just regarding the pandemic, because it was mostly me and Michael working on it in person. And then, all the other performers contributed their parts remotely.
Okay.
But for me, I consider it really fortunate that I was able to finish recording everything before I moved, because I had this awareness that it would be really hard to pick it back up in the middle of it after a move. It just being so disorienting to do that, to move into a new space, that it takes time to set up a new studio. And by the time you do, you might not be in the same headspace as you were when you were working on the thing. So I kind of acknowledged that this was a window that was closing and I needed to finish everything that I could before I started packing, basically.
Yeah. How is your home studio? What does it look like? What are some of your favorite pieces of gear in there?
Well, my home studio while working on Green to Gold was a converted garage. So it was actually kind of a big space that I basically separated in half with like giant hanging curtains, because it was only half insulated. It was like insulated on half of one side of the studio. So I kind of had to curtain off the part that was not insulated just so I wouldn't freeze to death. Then, I padded all the walls with sound treatment and hung string lights all over the place and got pretty much the entire record recorded there. And I really loved working out of that space, though. Like I said, it was very cold. So it had its drawbacks, but it was a bit of like a nice cave for me to work out of.
The string lights always tie the vibes together, honestly.
they really do.
Yeah,
hard to overstate that. They really do transform any room.
Yeah.
But now I'm working out of a different space. It's like an outbuilding on the property that we live. And it's like a small, I couldn't tell you the square footage. I don't know offhand. It's smaller than the last space I was working in, but it is insulated and heated, which is a big bonus. And it's like right on the edge of this giant field. So it's just been like a really wonderful spot to work out of.
That sounds
for
so
the last
peaceful.
Year. Yeah, it's really nice. And I've kind of taken like a bit more of a minimal approach to this one, whereas in the garage I had so much space that I was just like all the gear is going to be in there, even if it's not stuff I use, just because I have the space for it. And there'll be a drum kit and there'll be all these keyboards and things that I don't ever use and amps that I don't use. And then this space, I just have to be a bit more economical with what lives in here. And so it's forced me to be choosy about what I actually use and letting those be the items that are always available, always set up to go.
Right. Yeah. That's probably better for like peace of mind anyway. And, keeps you focused.
Yeah. I think it works better for me to have somewhat fewer options, or to not like have stuff flying around that is almost like furniture and never gets used.
Yeah. Kind of a broad question, but is there a couple pieces of gear that were like key in the production of this album that you used?
Yeah, actually, I'm looking around now and I think I could probably spot a few of them. Okay, so one of them is an old like rack mounted analog delay. It's called Ibanez Multimode Analog Delay AD202. And this was like a delay unit that was, I think it was produced in the 80s. And I mean, analog delays are, very easy to come by nowadays in pedal form, but back then they used to be these like rack units that are, about like 20 inches across and pretty deep and, just bigger pieces of gear. And I like to think that they have a bit more personality just being older and a little rougher around the edges. But so this was a device that I basically would feed different loops through and just let the delay time just run and and deteriorate for like a long time. So that sound that opens the record is basically a loop that I made on a piano, I think, and fed it through this thing and then just let it run until, you know, it just keeps repeating and repeating and repeating, but the sound is morphing and changing as, you know, as it kind of cycles through this circuitry over and over and over again until it turns into something else. So that would be one.
Nice.
Oh, I mean, the other one would be my dad's pedal steel, actually, pedal steel guitar, which if you haven't seen one, it's basically, it's like a standing instrument on four legs. It's used in a lot of country music. Recently, a lot of people have been using it as a kind of foundation for ambient music to create like long drawn out tones and just beautiful textural soundscapes. Chuck Johnson made a record entirely of ambient pedal steel a couple of years ago that is, you know, was definitely on like heavy repeat while I was making this record. And I ended up using it for pretty much the same thing, just like kind of gentle swells and creating chords from these long drones with my limited abilities on this instrument, which is very hard to play.
Wow, that's so interesting. I'll have to check that out for sure. Well, thank you so much for sharing. I'm sure all the music nerdy people will appreciate that. Not that you have to be a nerd to appreciate that, but anyway.
But you do a little bit.
A little, yeah. So, you know, I understand you've had some pretty intense issues with your hearing, and you know, I'd love to know, how did you find writing and recording this with your hearing issues? Has it gotten easier over time?
Well, I think part of what I end up needing to take into consideration is recording at lower volumes and listening back to recordings at lower volumes.
Okay.
You know, I used to just slam everything. I would listen to my mixes so loud. That's a pretty common thing with people making records. I think, you know, it's not uncommon to listen to what you're working on really, really loud, especially if you're excited about it, or if you are trying to listen really closely. And sometimes the best way to listen closely is to just turn the volume up to be able to hear the detail, nuances in the sound, to hear, you know, just clarity in the recording. But I really made an effort to keep the volume lower this time around for the sake of just being able to sustain this for longer. Because in the course of making a record, you listen to it countless times and you just have to save your hearing. You have to think about the long game, and ear fatigue is a real thing. Even if you don't have the kind of hearing issues that I had several years ago, you can wear out your hearing when you're listening to something too loud for too long. So that was something I really tried to keep in mind throughout this whole process, was like, keep it at a low volume so that you can work for longer.
Yeah, that's definitely good to know and important. So I'm assuming your hearing is a lot better these days then.
Yeah, my hearing is a lot better than it used to be. You know, I have my hearing back in the ear that lost it. The tinnitus is pretty manageable these days. I think if I am exposed to a lot of loud sound, a lot of loud noises, it will flare up. And also if I'm not like sleeping enough, it'll flare up, or bad, you know, bad diet. All the things you associate with tour tend to aggravate my tinnitus. But I've gotten a lot better at managing those things and making sure I'm getting enough sleep, making sure I'm like protecting my hearing when I'm in a loud place.
Yeah, that's good. Thank God it came back. That's so scary what happened to you. You know, you just wake up one day and it's not there. Did you expect that? Like, or did you see that coming at all?
No, not at all. I mean, I think looking back on it in hindsight, I should have known that touring for so many years and playing these really loud shows, which we did for the first several years of our existence, like the shows were just so loud on stage. And I very rarely wore hearing protection. So looking back on it, I can see that definitely contributed to it. But when it happened, it was not like a gradual loss of hearing or like the gradual onset of tinnitus. It was really like woke up one morning and boom, everything sounded different. And there, I don't think anything can prepare you for that.
Like, what did you do? Did you, like, I would have freaked out. I would have been like,
yeah, I freaked
what
out.
Is happening?
Like, yeah, no, I freaked out. Like, I freaked out. I asked myself, what's happening? And then, you know, asked myself, how worried should I be about this? How long is it going to last? What do I do? And so clearly the first step was, you know, go see a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after you suddenly realize that you don't know what you're dealing with. I think I spent the first day thinking that I just kind of like popped my ears the way that sometimes happens if you're on an airplane or at really high elevation, even though it was like so much more intense than that. And I'd never actually experienced something like this. I just thought maybe this was just kind of a fluke and was going to go away over the course of the day. And, you know, when it didn't, and when it got worse, I realized that I needed to go to a doctor. So I saw one doctor who didn't know what was going on, recommended to another specialist who still sort of didn't know what was going on, but had some ideas about it and some suggestions, and, you know, prescribed me some steroids to bring down the pressure that was in my ears. And that kind of began this process of recovery that took a couple of months, at least for the most like severe part of it. And then it was kind of a long tail after those first couple of months of getting back to relative normal for the next couple of years.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, you know, I'm glad it's a lot better now, thank God. So the album, it's a little bit more quieter, slow than some previous albums. And I absolutely love it. I'm just wondering what has inspired this kind of quieter vibe. It still fills a room. Like, I don't mean it in that way, but it's just a little more low key.
Well, you know, part of that, it's so funny because I recognize that this is a more low key sounding album than Familiars, let's say, but there's an album in between Familiars and Green to Gold, which was a solo album that I made called Impermanence. And
yes,
that is an extremely quiet album, with very, you know, using very minimal components to create those recordings. And it employs a ton of silence across the record, you know, making silence almost its own instrument. And the whole thing is pretty much whispered. So, you know, that was the record I made coming out of the incident with my hearing. And then I went into this record saying, okay, like with this new approach, which is sort of a way of me adapting to these new circumstances, what would a full band album sound like? And, you know, where I started was, was with, you know, earthier instrumentation that I thought this album would be a lot of guitar. I'd maybe like bring back acoustic guitar after not having used it on a record since Hospice, I guess. And, you know, more piano and just kind of delicate instrumentation, not making it precious so much as just making it easy, making it feel easy. And it was no surprise to Michael that I wanted to make this kind of music. And, you know, I've been kind of pulling us in a more mellow direction for years and years. And he has enthusiastically come along for that journey. So, you know, I encouraged him to like play with brushes a lot. You know, there, I think he's playing with sticks on a couple of tracks, but, you know, we were just trying to build something that was not exactly like hushed, but that kind of, jogged along at like an easy pace and wasn't jarring, you know, that it could kind of exist in this more subdued place and would have dynamics too, but would not be about, you know, reaching for the rafters or shooting for the rafters, whatever that expression is. Aiming for the rafters, I don't know,
I'm not sure. Yeah, it's it's great. So does he help you with the songwriting as well, or is that all you?
Yeah, there's a lot of back and forth between the two of us, and a lot of these songs started with him playing drums and nothing else, and me finding chord progressions that I felt like would coincide with what he was playing or complement his playing. And then sometimes what I came up with seemed like it actually maybe needed a slightly different pattern from him, and so he might rewrite what he had done. And we were constantly tweaking and reworking these and doing different versions of these songs. So I think with a couple of them, we ended up with like three or four different iterations of a single idea that, you know, started in one place and then got carried over to somewhere else.
Nice. Okay, cool. I remember what I was going to say actually previously. I kind of slipped my mind, but I think that's really cool. You took inspiration from Impermanence and, tied it into this. For anyone listening, you should definitely check out that album. My favorite song on there is Karuna. Always brings me so much peace when I need that. Yeah, stunning album. So what does Green to Gold represent to you thematically, lyrically? How would you compare it to Familiars? Does it kind of have a bridge at all?
I think it's a lot simpler than Familiars. I think it's, if you were to ask me what Familiars is about, it would be hard for me to like explain it in an elevator pitch. Mm-hmm. But I feel like with Green to Gold, it's basically, I think of it about as being about change over time and, seeing the change in your life reflected in nature. And that's kind of like the simple version of it, which was where it's kind of what I expected the album to be in a general sense. And then the songs thankfully just fell into place because I think there's this sort of inarguability about that being a thing that happens in life. Like your life changes, and sometimes it's sudden, which is kind of where Impermanence was coming from. But then sometimes it's gradual and you can't really notice the change or understand the change until you have had some time to process it and can look back on it.
Yeah.
And so this idea of Green to Gold, it's a changing of seasons essentially. And that was just a convenient phrase that I landed on that immediately just felt right to me. And also sort of sounded like the title of an album that already existed, like it sounded to me like a greatest hits compilation of a band from the 70s that didn't actually exist. And so we kind of ended up like designing the all the artwork and the LP design and all that stuff sort of designed to feel that way. Like yeah. It's this kind of like older classic album, but one that never actually existed.
Oh, I love that. I love that concept. I really love that it's about change, especially in a year where it kind of feels like, it's kind of felt like we're standing still. It feels like for me, like I was supposed to do so many things, meet new people, go new places, and that would help me grow. But I've acknowledged recently, like I have grown and I kind of didn't realize I did, but anyway, it's nice to have an album that's about that and just acknowledging inner growth through this time. In terms of your writing, it's, some of the songs are really straightforward, which I love. Like, I think Just One Sec is great. Just, all about those internal struggles in a relationship or you have expectations of each other. And I obviously Hospice is a bit more of a metaphor, and this album's a bit more straightforward, I'd say. Could you talk to me a bit about what your writing process was like for these lyrics? Do you keep them all in a book? Are you digital?
I used to write by hand. Lately, I think for the last few years, probably starting with Familiars, I think I pretty much moved to digital, mostly because it's just so much easier for me to jot down an idea on my phone wherever I happen to be. And the kind of like romantic version of me when I was younger would bring a notebook around with him everywhere. And I worked out of notebooks when I was, you know, when I was writing a lot of the earlier records, but it was so rare that if I was out doing something and an idea came to mind that I'd pull out my notebook and write it down. It was sort of like, I had a similar thing with like film cameras where I used to take photos and it would have these kind of like kooky film cameras with me and would sometimes take them out to shoot a photo, but so much of the time it was just too much of a hassle in a particular moment where I wanted to grab something that I ended up just not taking a ton of pictures. And it ended up the same way with notebooks, where I would work on things like at home or in the studio in a notebook, but on the fly, like an idea that just occurs to you on the subway or when you're out at a friend's house or whatever, it just became so much easier for me to have an ongoing text document where I could just throw something in there and just save it for later. So it's a little less romantic to me, but it's, I think it means that I do a lot more writing and that I'm able to grab the ideas that happen when you're not trying to find them, but the things that just occur to you out of the blue.
Yeah, totally. No, that makes sense for sure. Bringing it back to instrumentals, you guys have such phenomenal buildups in songs like Endless Louder, Putting the Dog to Sleep, Bear, and most recently, Volunteer. What are some of your secrets, if you care to share, for crafting such a fantastic buildup?
Sometimes the gear really helps. You know, that analog delay I was talking about, that's used in Volunteer in that ending segment where it's repeating the name of the song over and over again. And that chorus that's repeating that word is kind of like the tail is getting stretched out kind of towards the horizon. That was essentially like a multi-part harmony being pushed through a bunch of reverb and also that delay. So that can really help kind of accentuate a build that's already going on.
Right.
In the studio, a lot of the time, it's just a matter of finding chords that feel like they are building. Sometimes that's an ascending chord progression. Sometimes it's some kind of melody that feels cyclical or circular, so that you can repeat it, but continue to kind of layer on top of it, so that as one thing stays the same, it starts to go widescreen essentially and starts to change along different parameters. But yeah, I think a lot of the time it's about starting with fewer elements, knowing that you're going to be kind of piling on top of it and opening up the space as the song goes on.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I have to say that buildup is just, it's incredible. And, you know, some of your past buildups and past songs are a bit more louder and bigger and there's more things incorporated, but I was so blown away by how impactful and big it sounds when it's I find it to be really minimalistic. So well done. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's probably my favorite song on the album, to be honest with you. What did you take away, or what are some of your biggest takeaways from this album and experience recording it?
Well, I kind of set out at the beginning of this wanting to make it like a more relaxed recording experience, recording environment for myself. I put a lot of pressure on myself, both in writing familiars and recording impermanence. And with impermanence, I was really dead set on this kind of minimal aesthetic and using very few elements to record the songs and perform the songs, that I put these expectations on myself of knocking them out in one take. And I practiced and practiced and practiced way more than I ever have for recording a record. Usually I'm way more like sloppy about it, or I'm like, I'll record a good enough take and kind of make it work somehow through studio wizardry. But with Impermanence, I was dead set on recording these flawless takes, and it was really stressful while I was recording, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't rise to that occasion. I psyched myself out, basically. And so coming out of that experience, at the very beginning of even approaching making this album, I just said to myself that I want this to be fun. I don't want there to be this huge pressure on the process. I want it to be recording for the enjoyment of recording and writing for the enjoyment of writing. And if it starts to feel too serious, or if it starts to feel like the stakes are too high, then I'm doing something wrong. A friend of mine has kind of had this mantra for, I don't know, since we were kids, that is basically, you know, relating to making records, that it's supposed to be fun. And it's really easy to lose sight of that. But it's something that I try to keep in the forefront of my mind when I'm making these records, is that it's supposed to be fun.
Yeah, I can imagine. And I can imagine it can become really stressful. It can be easier to let it become stressful when you're, you know, doing a take over and over and over again. And if you're a perfectionist, I'm sure it can be tough.
And I think if you start thinking of yourself as kind of like a high wire act or something, that like you need to execute a flawless performance, and that is like your craft, you can really psych yourself out. You can really pile way too much pressure on yourself in a medium where that's not really necessary. It's one thing to go on stage and try and give the best performance that you can, but recording can be very forgiving. And that can be what's fun about the studio, is like you can just kind of mess around and it'll come together if you spend enough time with it.
Mm-hmm. Just to add on to that, I'm sure also specifically in more like ambient style music, the pressure is probably even bigger. Sorry, if you could just remind me the name of the member of the touring member of your band.
Oh, Timmy Mislock. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember his ambient set for the hospice tour. It was so crazy precise. Like I was totally blown away anyway.
And he's also up there doing it by himself, you know.
Yeah.
It's like when you are with a band or a group of other performers, you know, you kind of cover for each other and you have each other's back. But when you're doing something up there by yourself, there's nowhere to hide. And that's really hard.
Yeah, for real. So you're obviously really passionate about music, but what else have you been filling your time with over this past year?
Well, I've been doing a lot of gardening, not lately, but over the spring and summer. My partner and I built a garden here at this new place that we're at, and spent a lot of time tending to that. And it was definitely in need of a lot of overhaul and TLC. So we put a lot of time into that. And that was right around the time that I finished the record. So it was nice because I kind of had a bunch of time open up, and it gave me the opportunity to just kind of get my hands in the dirt for a while. That was really nice. So I was doing that. I did a bunch of woodworking projects in the, you know, summer into the fall, which is a hobby I picked up a couple of years ago that I continue to practice whenever I get the chance and whenever things with music kind of, quiet down a little bit, gives me a chance to try and practice those skills and make some furniture and some things for the studio and, you know, nothing terribly complicated.
Cool. You should open an Etsy shop. No, I love gardening too. It's so peaceful. I can't wait for the weather to get a bit better so I can do the same. But yeah, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I guess, you know, when things are normal, can we expect a tour?
Yeah, absolutely. We have scheduled and moved our tour several times already. So I can't say with any certainty when it'll end up actually happening, but it will happen. And yeah, we will do shows on this album, and hopefully everyone hasn't forgotten that this album exists by that time. You know, it's so crazy thinking about records that came out at the beginning of lockdown and how long ago that feels already.
Yeah, no, I've been thinking, like, how is it going to be when artists can tour again? Because is everyone going to be trying to tour their albums from the last year? And then is everyone who's putting out albums this year also going to be trying to tour? Like, I just feel like it's going to be a lot, but I can tell you, I won't forget about it, and I will definitely be there, and I can't wait.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, hopefully soon enough. You know, like, I've been seeing some like shows in Australia and stuff.
Well, I think they might have handled things a little better than we did, at least in America. I'm not sure how you up north dealt with it, but we botched it for a while. We're getting it together, but
you guys are ahead of us. Oh my gosh, the vaccine situation is so bad, but like, we are in full lockdown here in Toronto, so I don't even think there's been a million people in Ontario, which is the province, vaccinated yet. So it's really bad, but anyway.
God. Yeah, we've got a ways to go, but it is going to end, and life is going to get better for everyone.
Totally.
So we got to be patient, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. This was awesome. I love the album. Where can people find you?
You can find us on that good old internet. We're on all the usual places, Twitter, Instagram. Technically, we're on Facebook, but I don't really use it. our website is antlersmusic.com. I think that's it.
Perfect. Email. Yeah. Yeah. Everybody, make sure to check out Green to Gold. You can buy it on vinyl, CD, check out the merch and all that. Peter, thank you so much. And thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thanks so much, Gemma. It's really a pleasure to be on.